GNSO NCSG meeting at ICANN 61 San Juan on the 13th of March 2018 in room 104 GNSO.
Hi everyone, we are going to give this another 3 minutes and then we will start the meeting since we have guests coming in at 5:15. Okay, we are going to start. Josh? welcome everyone to the NCSG open session. We are going to, so just a couple of housekeeping. State your name before you speak for transcription purposes and speak at the microphone clearly. And that's about it. So what we are going to have, I think everyone knows each other, but we can do a tour de table if you want. And then we can start, and I'm going to introduce you to, but let me just go over the agenda for the moment. No, let's do the tour de table, it's more logical. Mine Farzan Abed, the NCSG chair.
Rafiq Namang, the GNSO Counselor for NCIG and also the Policy Committee Chair.
Joan Kerr, MPOC Chair.
Arsène Tongali, GNSO Counselor for the NCSG.
Hatambi Joan, newcomer and a fellow.
Farrell Foley, NCSG Policy Committee.
Hi, Elsa Saade, NCUC Executive Committee representing Asia Pacific.
Tatiana Chopina, GNSO Councillor, elected by NCSG.
This is Gangadhar Pandey. NPOC Membership Coordinator.
Rob Plummer, NPOC Vice Chair.
Stephanie Perrin, NCSG Counselor.
Oroluwa Leshi, NPOC. Excuse
me, sir. Sherry Sheck, a fellow.
Michael Cassidy-Duvall, freelancer.
Okay, thank you very much. So welcome, I'm gonna go through the agenda. We will have the NOMCOM leaders in at 5:15. They are going to talk to us about NOMCOM and then we have the finance and budget discussion session with the finance team. They requested to be here for 15 minutes and they're gonna discuss our comments. And then we will have the interesting issue of GDPR and who has privacy because we have not discussed it enough. So we are gonna talk to Thomas Rickert, have a discussion about it. I think this will be a very informative discussion so that we know where we are at and where we are going and set our goals like that. For the NOMCOM session, I just want to give you an introductory background. As you know, we only have one non-commercial representative on NOMCOM, and that's NCUC representative on NOMCOM. And this has, we have been saying this for a long time, that we need more non-commercial representatives on NOMCOM, and they have not taking our request into account, but now that, Rafiq, just a process question, now that the review is going on, since we made this comment that there should be like more balanced representation of commercial and non-commercial, do you think something could change?
So there was the Rafiq Damak speaking. There was that kind of initial report from the independent examiner in I think in January. So they asked the community for input was within a really short time. And my understanding, they will take this comment and to they should adjust the report. But I'm not sure to which extent. So we will have to wait for the final report. I'm not sure in term process, even after final report, can or not put for public consultation, there is not that much we can change. So we have to wait and to see what they did. So,
thank you, Rafiq. Farzan is speaking. So what recently NOMCOM has changed its operating procedure. I have not followed up on the latest operating procedure, but we are not clear whether what kind of change has been done, but we are concerned that the non-voting members in NOMCOM might not be included in the process. So this is one of the questions that I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask them, how are you anticipating to, how are you including non-voting members in your process? And after that, we will also talk about the finance and budget discussion. We have quite clear views on that, and Aidan has provided a very extensive comment on the budget. So we are just going to discuss the various issues. And of course, we are going to thank Xavier and the finance team for the thorough report. And then we are going to go over for GDPR and who is privacy by Thomas Rick. Now, I also, since I have time, NOMCOM leaders are not here yet, I want to just give you a small update on the NCSG policy course. As I told the policy committee and the executive committee at NCSG, we have there's a consultant that ICANN referred us to, and that consultant has come up with a plan. And the plan is that we are going to have six MPOC members, six NCUC members, and six NCSG members that participate in this program. And then afterward, the program starts with a face-to-face meeting in Panama, and then we will have two webinars after that. It will include scenarios of how various working groups work, and what are the it's more like a role play. So we will play the commercial stakeholder group and non-commercial stakeholder group and GAC and try and give the members an understanding of what really is happening in these working groups. So some people have raised concern that this might be similar to the leadership course. We have taken that into account. Of course, it will be split to negotiation and consensus building, but it won't be. It will be specifically about NCSG participation. This is the new aspect of it, and. We also have that's about it. I'm going to send this report to the policy committee as well as the executive committee, and then we are going to go forward with the consultant, and then people should also participate in designing the course. He's going to ask for advice, and we will design the course. And together, and then he can implement it. Now I can see that the NOMCOM leaders are here. So without further ado, we can just start the segment with. Please. No. Yeah.
Well, while we're waiting for Saheed, we can start to introduce ourselves to save some time. My name is Hans-Petter Holen. I'm associate chair of this year's NOMCOM. That means I was chair last year and selected by the chairs to advise him and sort of bring the knowledge from last year forward to this year's committee.
Sure. My name is Damon Ashcraft, and I am the chair-elect of the NOMCOM, and it's nice to be here today.
And chair-elect means that he's then probably going to be next year's chair. So, and then our chair this year is coming in, and we're just warming up for you to make sure that you have a flying start in the meeting.
Thank you. Hi there, everybody. Thank you so much for the time. We were waiting outside for about an hour. We were so keen to get here, and then something dragged me away, so I apologize. Let me tell you about the nominating committee. I'm sure you know most of you, and you can get this from the website, and we have limited time, so I won't go through the entire presentation, but you probably know what our makeup is. You actually have representatives from the, or delegates from the NCSG who are, like, you know, who's from the NCSG this year? Henriette, who's actually on the nominating committee. We're the ones who appoint to those seats which aren't elected seats. So we actually select and appoint people from the community or from outside the community based on getting CVs. So this year we have the ICANN Board of Directors, 3 seats open. That means, first of all, we have no geographic restrictions this year, and we need to fill 3 seats that are going to open up in the ICANN Board. We have 1 seat with the GNSO. It's a non-voting position, and again, no geographic limitations on that. So anybody can apply. It's really important that we mention this. You don't have to be affiliated with the GNSO to be able to qualify, to be able to be selected for the seat or get a reference from the GNSO. Anybody can apply. The same is true for the at-large and CCNSO, by the way, but there's a little exception to the CCNSO I'm going to come to. At-large, 2 seats, European, North American, and the CCNSO has 2 seats as well. Now, it's very important that we stress this. You cannot be a person who is affiliated with, involved in, or related to the CCTLD to then be appointed to the CCNSO Council. That's the only thing that you got to keep in mind. So those are the basic slots we need to fill this year from within the NOMCOM. And as you can see, this is important. These are leadership positions. So if you have people that you want to suggest, you have a small window. We'll tell you what that window is. But let's give you some stats. Last year, we did better. We moved the applications of women were from 19% in 2016 has moved to 36% in 2017. So we're hoping to do better in 2018. At the same time, when we filled positions, 29% women filled positions in 2016, we managed to up that number to 50% in 2017. And by the way, as you all know, that there were 2 board positions last year, both board positions. We appointed women. So here's what's happening basically with this map. As you can see that in the legend, those who have a gray silver sort of board around them. These are the people rotating off. So you have the CCNS rotating off. That is the African representative. But you will see that the CCNSO delegate or director, we've just found out that his replacement is already has already been selected. So then you have we have Lito, who is from Latin America. He will be ending his term this year. And we also know that the Suez will be from Europe is ending her term this year as well. But and also George Sadowski's term limited, so he's actually going to be leaving the board as well. So that basically means two board members that we've highlighted as Lissouise and Lito are eligible to be reappointed by the NOMCOM to the board. We have nomcom.icann.org, and this year we're going to make sure, starting from this year, that the nominating committee of that particular year's website is nomcom.icann.org. It used to keep changing. So you have to do the 19th of March to make these applications. It's a very short window. We haven't decided whether they're going to extend it by a few days, but we might. But really consider 19th of March as your hard deadline, because you've got to get in the expressions of interest by then, so that then by the 26th of March you can actually finalize your application. So you have a little bit of a grace period to complete the application and submit them. If you want to suggest somebody because you think they're not applying, you can do two things. You can let us know. We'll reach out to them. The second thing you can do is basically have them speak to us. We're happy to talk to people. And especially if you could focus on women and people from Latin America, that would be great. Please reach out to those networks that you might have. There's certain improvements we made this year. We noticed that the NOMCOM had great responsibility but no real power, and we'll explain why. The NOMCOM's destiny was predetermined before its birth. Before we could be seated, everything about our budget, et cetera, was decided before that. And so we had a Groundhog Day situation that every single year we were presented with the same set of options, which were basically you either say yes to this or you don't get it. Which is, for instance, the recruitment firm. We had to decide either the one offered up, either we select them or we don't have a recruitment firm that year. Similarly, that is true for the assessment firm as well. And we never knew what our budgets were. We couldn't decide our own schedule. We couldn't actually decide when we wanted to meet face-to-face other than the three meetings that basically were budgeted. So our basic operational planning has been a problem. And that's because staff had to decide and the budget had to be set in 11 months in advance. And at that point, we didn't exist, right? And NOMCOM exists 11 months prior to its seating. So we changed some stuff. This year, on our birthday, the day we were born, we basically took all the decisions we needed to take. We then communicated that to staff. The first one was a forced budget reveal. Tell us what the numbers are. Tell us what money you've got that basically is allocated to us so we can then decide how to basically make decisions within that budget, although I know we can't get more money, even though we asked for it and didn't get it. So we were able to get a second recruitment firm this year, and thanks to staff and ICANN.org to make that happen. The second is we've changed our assessment firm. We've also done what I think is the most important thing, decided that we're going to move to a face-to-face intersessional, and I'll explain to you why that's important in a second. And all of this basically is because of the enormous effort of staff in ICANN.org. We also have made a further improvement. This year we have a job description that the ICANN board has actually vetted and approved and said, yep, that's right, that's what it looks like to be on the board. It's on our website now. We've also basically improved the criteria. So we have basically preset criteria of how we're going to select folks in the board. Number one, job description, which the board, as I just mentioned, provided some vetting to. The second was a list of qualities and skills. Our committee's worked in the last 2 months really hard on this to set up qualities and skills that we're going to match against. And there's board guidance that the board has provided. That's not binding board guidance, but it basically is useful for us to know what the board is really looking for. And they've given us different things that they want, hopefully, in the candidate that we choose. So we used to do things like using a SurveyMonkey approach where basically you had the list of candidates and we used to rate them 1 to 5. And that number that then, you know, used to come, say people got 5 or 4 or 3. But then we say, well, maybe people below 3 shouldn't be looked at. You know, why are we looking at people below 3? So based on that, I guess, subjective, without deliberation rating, a lot of people would be eliminated from the process. And we are thinking there must be a way to try and improve it. So we decided that it's probably best to have in-depth, face-to-face meetings for the deliberations when you do assessments and selections. We actually talk to each other. We go through every application. So this year, every single candidate who applies to the NOMCOM will get the opportunity that they will, their application will be reviewed and assessed by us when we sit together in deliberation. And I think that's a big thing, because a lot of people came to us and said that, you know, and I'm honestly tell you this, a lot of people said that NOMCOM's a joke. Wow, the way you guys do things and the way we've been treated previously, what are you doing about improving this process? So we've taken a hard look at it. We've recruited double the recruitment capacity, as I mentioned, two firms, but we also at the same time put out RFP this year so that we will have and Damon next year as chair-elect will be able to choose from a pool of firms, not just one or two. So a lot of people used to say NOMCOM is a black box. You know, you apply to this black box and you don't hear back. Nobody knows what's going on. So for the purpose of transparency, every candidate, when they don't make it to the next stage, will be given will be sent an email letting them know that they haven't. And, you know, we'll basically encourage them to apply again, possibly, and let them know that we may still come back to them, but you haven't made it. And so they don't have to plan to be in Panama, for instance, and not know what's happening to apply for visas and travel and other things. So that communication, I think, is a big change from previous years. We want to know our customers, in a sense. We've implemented trainings, different types, interview training, confidentiality training, training on board governance skills, so we understand what we're looking for when we interview people or select people. We've also done trainings on, well, what does the CCNSO delegate to the NOMCOM know how the ALAC works? Does he know how the GNSO works? Does he know how the board works? And vice versa amongst that group. So the only way to do that is for us to basically give training to each other about what our groups do and how they function, so they understand the political dimensions that they work in, so that the slots when we fill them are selections are based on that understanding. And we had this problem where basically after we used to do selections, we used to send the names off to due diligence to ICANN, and ICANN would do due diligence. But here's the problem. What if ICANN comes back, and this happened last year, and says, we got a problem with one of them. The whole process gets delayed. We can't get the message out. And then at the end of that term, really, members of NOMCOM are sort of not necessarily going to get together. We might not even, and we didn't in one circumstance, get quorum. So we've decided to improve that process and say, no, when we do our final selections, when we do the interviews face-to-face in Panama for board members, we want to make sure that everyone who comes to that has been pre-vetted through due diligence so that we can have a final decision. We don't have to wait until some unknown circumstance arises. Let me just finish a couple of slides and we'll come back to that. And so we also, you know about the website that now is, you know, static, which is nomcom.icann.org, which will have that year's nominating committee. The other thing we've done is we've hard-coded in our operating procedures the fact that we're going to reach out and ask every ACSO and, you know, that we will basically be appointing to, guidance on what they want. And we're waiting on the GNSO. So we know that you're part of the GNSO. So if you could encourage getting us a letter to, you know, basically say, well, what does the GNSO think is a good GNSO candidate to select? Please let us know. The other thing we've changed, this is my last slide, is that the bylaws say that there is a distinction between what is term limited versus term unlimited, and therefore voting versus non-voting delegates and liaisons. And so while the non-voting on term unlimited liaisons are participating, deliberating, suggesting, recommending, even participating in straw polls, as they've done in the past, they will not be part of a voting process where the fate of a candidate moving from stage one to stage two will be only determined by a vote of those who are authorized to vote. That's pretty much it. That's my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Zahid. Rafiq, your hand's up.
Thanks, President. Thanks, Zahid, for the presentation.
Thank you.
So I was in some time in my life in the NOMCOM. That was an interesting experience. And so I was seeing all these kind of, you call improvement and changes. But I have some concern in some area. In particular, like you are complaining that, not complaining, you are raising the concern that your you are like someone else doing preparing everything for the NOMCOM beforehand. But I see one of your suggestions that you are going to do that for the next NOMCOM when you are talking about the strategical planning. So, I mean, it seems that you are going to do that too, and you are going to set the path for the next NOMCOM. In the last slide, you are talking about law abiding. I mean, it's kind of, maybe strange wording here, But my understanding from the process that the vote is something that happened at the end, that when you vote, I think in the last, the final slate, what you are doing exactly is the polling. And I think when you mentioned before the server, SurveyMonkey versus deliberation, it can be kind of misleading, because what you are doing with that SurveyMonkey, you mean the polling, which is you trying to get some trying to get some objective assessment of a candidate, because my fear with the deliberation, even it seems positive and trying to be more inclusive. In fact, any deliberation will be dominated by some members, and they can push other members to go in some direction. So there are many concerns. I understand that you are trying to improve and to do better things within the NOMCOM. And also in terms of this kind of improvement, don't you think that maybe the community should be more involved in that process and to give you guidance? I mean, this is one of the issues usually with the NOMCOM, is how it's operating. It seems like independently from the rest of the community, there is some reason in how it's set. But and maybe the improvement, it's even if done in the way that to be more positive and constructive, there are arising many, many, many concerns. So,
thanks, Rafiq. There's a lot of questions there, and I'm going to keep asking you if I've got one of them or not, but let me start asking a question back. So let's take an example of how the online survey, as we called it, versus and rating, which you thought was useful, versus the face-to-face deliberation. So I'll pose it to the group, and you know, what you think is better. So let's assume that, and this is what used to happen, is that we had, say, 100 applications. And the NOMCOM membership would be asked, sitting at home, everyone independently, without talking to each other. So I don't think it's objective. I think it's very subjective, because everybody's giving their own opinion. And it kind of depends on whether you've done the hard work of actually looking at an application. And you've had no discussions, so nobody else's view is playing on your mind. And you're asked to sort of, you know, rate this particular candidate. And you've got 100 candidates you've got to go through. So you rate them. You know, somebody gives someone 1, 3, 5, 4, whatever it is. And that leads to a certain number. Now remember this, you don't do that a second time. That number sticks. Based on that number, the ones who got the 5 are the ones at the top of the list. The ones who got a 1 are at the bottom of the list. So if I think, that application doesn't look very interesting, or you know, I haven't spoken to that person, but it doesn't really matter, I think. And by the time you get through 100 applications, you're tired. Right? This is a practical process. So what ends up happening is that subjective rating, which is done without deliberation and discussion with anybody else, sticks through the process. And then you do have to do something else. You have to say, well, okay, now what do we do with this rating? And you say, well, we'll cut them off. Well, where do we cut them off? At 4, at 3.5, at 3. And I got to tell you, it's really random. You take a mean and a median and say, well, what's the mean and median that works out? And based on that number, maybe it could be 3.45, 3.5. And you draw a line in the sand. And everybody below that suddenly gets rejected. If I could complete my point. So everybody gets rejected. And everybody above that list is a person who basically now is in play. And what we've noticed is that, and it happened this year, for instance, Fiona, if you know, who's with the ASO, a fantastic candidate from Kenya. Basically, when Damon and me asked her, she said, we don't even remember her from last year as an applicant. Right? And she declared this is not confidential. She actually said, I've applied last year, and what happened? And she was a great resource of what was wrong with the NOMCOM process or could have been improved. So that's why this online thing where people think that it's a good idea to do that actually causes prejudice. It's very subjective. And it actually has a discriminating effect, I think, a lot on developing country applicants, because obviously those applications tend to fall through. So what ends up happening is that meeting face-to-face, actually going through your application, and you disagreeing with me and I'm disagreeing with you about an application, saying, have you read this, actually does give you a better feel, and you make a really concerted decision. There's one other thing that happens. After the rating, we go on to a con call. And the con calls, I'll tell you what used to happen. A third of the time on the con calls, one third of the 3 hours, which means 1 hour out of the three hours, we used to keep asking, hey, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Can we get our warden?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Rafiq, I was completing my point.
No, it's okay. Go ahead, Rafiq.
Okay. Thanks, Zahid, for this explanation. But, I mean, you are telling me that you expect that, okay, so they, one thing that, because there are so many applications, so you are not sure how if people are reviewing carefully all the application, because they are not in the same, because there are so many and they are not in the same place. But, I mean, when you put all this...
Actually, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that every applicant deserves the same...
Okay.
Collective assessment.
Yeah, I understand that. However, so the problem with this deliberation and the meeting is there is a real risk that, I mean, that's the experience. You can ask many non-com members how some members can dominate the discussion and they can influence others. So the polling, it's not perfect. Nobody says perfect way. Or the number is a ranking is a perfect way. However, it ensures some kind of, let's say, some level of kind of freedom for others to express themselves. Maybe there is a problem of ranking, but do you expect that all for one candidate that he will get from everyone a bad ranking?
Yes, actually, that's absolutely true. Yeah. So let me clarify.
Please, I'm hearing you, but I'm trying to develop. So you expect that he will get a really bad ranking from most of the non-com, but somehow he's a good candidate because there is some deliberation. Deliberation, there is a bias. You can influence by many arguments. I was in the non-com. I heard some what people can bring as argument, how they can defend candidates. So I'm personally not comfortable with that way. You can say that it's deliberation, everything is okay, it's kind of kumbaya, that everyone will be happy.
So can I get my word in edgeways as well? Okay. So let me explain why that's a problem. Because what happens is, I'll give you an example. I think the candidate is worth one. And I've seen so many times in the NOMCOM that when I speak to other people, and I start hearing, and then some people actually know folks. I think that the candidate is not one.
So, sorry, Zahid, that's called lobbying.
Yeah.
That's called lobbying.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have a problem here. Because when Zahid, please listen to us. So when you have the polling, I know it's not perfect. It's not good. I mean, it's not the best way. But you have some tools more objective than deliberation and lobbying. Because I can have the champions and try to influence my fellow non-com members. Yeah. How you can ensure that there is
so,
no bias?
So by this
how
logic,
you can ensure?
Rafiq, you got to let me speak a little bit. All right. So with this logic, the thing that would be best to do then would be the following: that actually we don't discuss with each other, because according to the logic I'm hearing, discussion is lobbying, and lobbying is not good. We should just do a survey.
No, you do that at the last at the you cannot do. Sorry, Zahid, you cannot do that. How you will do that for 100? I mean, that's why you are filtering. No, that's the why you are using the polling in the first place.
I'm confused.
There are other people that want to make a comment. So, okay. Hans Peter, if you, and then I will go to Stephanie, and then there is Raul.
So, I'm a bit surprised of having this discussion here, because we need to adhere by the ICANN bylaws. And the bylaws states that the NOMCOM sets its own procedures. I do take your point that maybe that's not good in the new structure. Maybe there should be some community input in that. Great, but we can't change the bylaws. You need to initiate that and get the board to change the bylaws through the process that's established for new bylaws. I mean, that's welcome. When we come to the non-voting versus voting members, it's exactly the same. The NOMCOM can't change the bylaws. We have to adhere to them. Rafiq is referring back to when he was on the NOMCOM. I've been on the NOMCOM now for 5 years. The process has been different every year, and the NOMCOM this year has decided that there are more actions than the last one that are actually as a vote, and we needed to do that. So we are trying to be as open as possible to explain this and share this. You have a committee member on the NOMCOM who can fully participate in this internally in the NOMCOM, and please give her your input so she can be most efficient there. But it's very important that we sort of separate the two things, that this NOMCOM now needs to get enough applications in. We need your help to do that, so we have a really good pool to select from. And then we need to work constructively to select the very best candidates. And there is no time now in this NOMCOM or under this bylaws to actually open up the discussion of our internal procedures.
Hans-Peter, this NOMCOM has been making many changes to the operating procedure in a way that we wonder, so the previous NOMCOMs were all wrong, and then suddenly we all want to improve, and so many changes that it's just astonishing for us.
Can I ask, and what do you mean by the so many changes which are a problem?
You have changed the operating procedures.
Yes. Which
and
one?
You have changed the operating procedure that a non-voting member can.
Yes, that's one.
Yes, and then you want to come up with an intersessional to have these to meet.
That's not a procedural change.
But you were talking about procedure here, Hans-Peter. Hans-Peter was talking about procedure.
No, so let me explain. It's not
Zahid,
a procedural change.
Zahid, you are here to talk to us. So, and I think you are here to also hear us. We have our concerns with the current operation of NOMCOM. We think that there are many things that are being called confidential, which should be open and transparent. There are many changes that are happening that we are not in favor of. And I believe that, yes, the bylaws say that, but if we have a serious problem with the operating procedure, there might be other ways that we actually can file a complaint or something. I mean, it's not like you can set your own procedure, but if it's biased, then it can be biased.
As you said, here to listen to
yes,
you, but,
sure.
but if it's possible, can I understand? Because you've said a lot of things which are basically judgmental about the fact that we're doing things which are a lot of changes and things, some things that you have objections to. I yet have to understand what is the objection. So let's start listing them. I think it's very helpful to have this discussion. Let's use this time to figure it out. So if the first thing you're saying is that the changes are taking place, could you tell us what the change is that you are that you are concerned about, and what's the concern?
Just to clarify, it's interesting that the voting, no voting issue was brought. I never talked about that. When I talked, Hans, I talked just about the polling, because that's before the voting on itself. So I'm surprised that was brought. However, I mean, what we are expressing here, that it's good that you do improvement and you think that you can change, and also a knowledge that you have that ability to set up your own operating procedure. Mm-hmm. We know that. However, we are expressing concern that you are changing, because you are so many. You may change the dynamics, and you have an intended consequences.
Change because as change
Zahid,
isn't a bad thing. I'm asking, what's the change that you have an objection to, and what's the objection?
Zahid, I just raised some points. Like, for example, for that.
Can we take it step by step? Let's take the first one, and we can respond to that. That's because otherwise I forget how many the list that you raised. So that's what's the first one.
Okay, so I raised about the idea, you said deliberation. I expressed my concern how the dynamics, that's the reality.
Okay, so I wasn't able to complete my response to that. If you let me complete my response to that.
Okay, I got your response, okay. But
no, I'd like to complete my response to that. If you allow me, I mean, it's important that people understand, because it's a very serious issue, right? You're saying that this doesn't work, so we'd like to be able to provide a response to that. So on the face-to-face, it's not a procedural change. We always have the deliberation. The only thing we're doing is, instead of having the deliberation over phone calls, we're having the deliberation face-to-face. That's the only change. And the reason we feel that's a very good change is that because when people sit at home and they don't basically meet each other face-to-face, they tend to not consider all the applications. And the second thing, which you are right about, is an actual procedural change, is that basically the subjective rating that everybody did at home as homework sticks forever, and it basically affects everybody who's below 3, for instance. So everybody who's got 3, 2, and 1 scoring is automatically out of the process, no discussion, no conversation, nothing. I think that's not healthy. I think it's unfair to candidates that basically by this blind process of people sitting at home that this thing can happen. So we think that it's really important that every single candidate, and I think I'm sure you'll agree with us, every single candidate should get the consolidated, combined review of the NOMCOM as it is done in many other places. So that's my response to the first one. So I understand what your concern is. I hope that's clarified. What's the second one?
So Stephanie had her hand up for a long time. Do you want to speak, Stephanie?
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. Yes, I just actually wanted to comment on this procedural fracas because I do feel your pain. I've been on these big staffing things in government where there's an appeal right, and, you know, it's a real, you try it one way where you separate people out, and yes, you have a very strict, you know, point grade rating, but it's useful to discuss and make sure that you're signing the points the same way. But I take the other, you know, we've had, and I've been like the manager, for lack of a better word, with all of these things in the teams, and then you have to make sure that your teams are congruent, mm-hmm. but not over-influencing each other. Correct. So it's a problem. I guess I raise my hand to, A, offer that observation that I feel your pain, you know. We should try and wrangle this down to, like, how does one come up with a good procedure, and mm-hmm. where do we put our input? I understand there's a review going on. Mm-hmm. Sadly, this packed agenda in these policy meetings is so packed, I don't think too many of us can make the review meeting tomorrow morning. Can we offer our comments on the procedural thing? The one thing that is, I think, encourages an awful lot of good documentation in government procurement is that appeal mechanism. You have to have your documentation absolutely watertight.
Yep.
And so that takes even longer to make sure that you're congruent and you're evaluating in the same frame. That's where my question is, like, how does that work with NOMCOM? How do you... You don't have an appeal mechanism like that. You don't have to produce the documentation that proves that you're using the same evaluation framework and that it isn't being influenced.
So let me answer the last one first, and then we'll go backwards. As you saw this year, what we're doing is we're setting a criteria. Now, the bylaws allow us to be able to, without, regardless of criteria, make decisions. We're trying to make sure that we are professional. We actually have a set of criteria against which we match candidates, and to the extent that that's possible, we're trying to apply it. But there's no bylaw requirement that it be done, so even as a chair, I can't enforce it. I have a challenge, even though I'd like to, because people should be disciplined. So that's the response to the first one. Response to the first thing that you raised, which was that basically, you know, about the ratings. Let me also clarify that the ratings will still take place. People will be actually rating 1 to 5, but that entire rating is not going to lead to a cutoff. So we're still going to be sitting at home, initially looking at the applications, and we're going to be doing 1 to 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, but we're not going to use an arbitrary number to say, right, everybody below 3, we're not going to look at you, or unless somebody specially brings you up on the list. And instead, everybody, including with the ratings that are available, is going to be part of discussions at the face-to-face intersessional. Which is a lot of work for us, no question, because that's 100 or something applications we have to go through, but we're willing to do that. And that's the commitment that this NOMCOM has shown, that we're going to work together and work hard, look at every single application. On the other point that you mentioned, what is the criteria and how do we provide input? I think even if you don't make the meeting in the morning tomorrow, I think that you have a 40-day window between, I think, end of this week, etc., when the recommendations will become available to the public, and then you can provide comments to that. And we encourage people to do that. Here's one other last thing. I said to somebody when they were saying, well, why is it that your rules are changing and why can't they be community-led? I will be the first to offer it up that if the community wants to make out the rules, please do so, because we spend so much time in debate going over it that we waste a lot of time. As a chair, I think we could be doing better things. So if the community wants to take control of what the rules are that govern us, it saves all this conversation that we're trying to have, and we'd be happy for you to do that. No question. I hope that answers the three questions. Yes, please.
I'm just Stephanie Perrin for the record. Both Rafiq and Farzi will probably pull out a gun and shoot me at this point, but I've been preaching about the COSO requirements for an accountability framework for ICANN, and I really do believe that it's incumbent upon us to mm-hmm. come up with better accountability yes. standards. And I don't mean that as a criticism mm-hmm. of this NOMCOM or past NOMCOMs, but we're on a maturity march correct. To a higher level.
Really?
And that means, and I would caution against full disclosure, you know, we don't have a Privacy Act right to see all of the deliberations of everybody, mm-hmm. but there should be better appeal rights from NOMCOM decisions and better transparency about the rating grades, you know. Mm-hmm. That, I think, we could be striving for. So just giving you a little heads up of what I will be saying to the NOMCOM review. Don't take it personally. This is part of my larger COSO campaign here.
We'd welcome. Everything you've said is something we would welcome. Thank you so much.
And talk to the reviewers. You don't have to be to the meeting. Find them and talk to them.
Hans-Peter, I am the chair here. I'm chairing this session. First of all, please state your name before you speak. Raul, you have a come.
Yes, a really quick one. You've been calling this polling subjective. That would be true if it was a poll for one person, but since there are so many other people than just one, you know, it's like calling an election subjective.
Let me clarify. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely correct. Let me explain what I'm trying to say. The number that is assigned by one individual person to that particular candidate, that one individual rating number, is a subjective rating, but when you put all of it together, that's an amalgamation of subjective views of all the members regarding that member, right? Now, it's possible that basically, and this has happened, that the majority of the members of the NOMCOM, when they looked at the application, didn't realize something, and they rated that person low. We've had situations where people have, and this has happened a very few times, where people have been picked out from right to the bottom, where they got 2.5, and people realized when they came to the interview, oh my God, did we make a mistake? So that's why that cutoff is a problem. And it is, you know. I mean, how do you know? You have no idea who that person is. You've not really done a deliberative discussion. You haven't thought beyond your own mind about that person. So, yeah. No, but I agree with you that subjective number is just the one that you place on that one individual. So I agree with that, yes.
So really, the sort of average scoring is objective in my eyes.
I would say an amalgamation of subjective views. An objective view would be basically what somebody else might also think as well, who's has had a time to just look at it objectively. So there are many ways we can cut it, and I don't disagree with you. We have found in practice, and I repeat this again for the purpose of emphasis, we have found in practice that people's ratings and their experiences when they have discussions and when they have interviews, they range so differently. And it's important that I keep an open mind to that. So we are doing the three things, just so that it's clear. We are having the ratings. We are going to do the ratings, but we're not going to make it eliminate people. Those rating numbers are going to be viewed by everybody and made available so that everybody knows who rated how much for whom. And you can discuss on the basis of that. You rated us too. Why did you do that? You know, tell me. Then there's going to be a discussion in the intersession where people are going to deliberate amongst each other. And based on that, there will be reduction. There will be voting, first straw polling, so non-voting people get to participate as well. And then there will be voting on whether that particular candidate goes forward to the next stage or not. So all of that is included. We haven't excluded any style or process. The only thing we've made a difference is that the rating numbers don't kick people out. That's all.
Thank you. There is a remote participant.
This is Sarah Leon from staff.
First, as an administrative matter, please state your name before speaking that include guest speakers as well. So there are two remote comments and questions. First is from Renata Aquino Ribeto. Would NAMCOM consider outreach to specific communities like the 200 IT women LACNIC and online meeting is possible? And then the second question is from Dorothy Gordon. During the individual assessments, are they entering their ratings on a platform?
Thank you. Let me answer Dorothy's question first. Yes, those ratings are being put onto a platform that is confidential and protected, and that's how it's been done for years. And there may be a follow-up after what I've just said. The first question from Renata, let me answer that. We would love that to be the case. In fact, in a particular situation this year, we realized that there are hubs in Africa, for instance, where individuals could take, and if you look at the screens right now, we're working on preparing something which is a documentary-type video tomorrow, and that will basically message out generically about what the NAMCOM is, because you'd be surprised in our public meeting, but after we completed the entire presentation, somebody stood up and said, you kind of said you were going to explain what the NAMCOM is. Could you explain what the NAMCOM is? And this is at the end of the entire presentation. So it's true that most people don't understand what the NAMCOM is, and so we're going to try to make an effort. And by the way, if you're not from the U.S., you've never heard of the NAMCOM, because you don't have that process anywhere else in the world. You just have it in the U.S. It's a very U.S. sort of centric thing, that they're nominating committees that choose people to boards as such. Otherwise, most people are elected as board members. So that's why we're going to do that. So having those hubs and us being able to give them that material that they can actually run those videos, et cetera, we completely agree, and we're trying to make that happen. To some extent, some of our folks who outreach did try that this year as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Zaid. We have a meeting with the finance team, but they are not here, so we can continue this until our... Is the finance team here?
I just need to check whether Charlie... Can you check whether we're ready to go? If you could just check in the next room, because we also have an appointment with the guys next door. Yeah, so we'll find out. We'll know. But let's carry on until then, please. And this is we are extending. We because of the concerns you have in the NCSG, we want to give you as much time as possible so we can answer your questions.
That is very kind. Thank you very much, Farzana Badi, speaking for the record. Okay. So, are there any comments? Other comments that you would like to make, Raul, and then Arsene. Okay, go ahead, Aaron.
Well, just really. Quick one. I think the change that you've made after the polls and the ratings that they won't eliminate candidates, I think that's a good change.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate that comment. And if you could, when you do send comments in to the review, if you could make that point, we'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
And please state your name.
My name is Zahid Jamil. I'm sorry, did I get that wrong? I apologize. Sorry.
Now this is Arsene Tungali. I'd like to understand a little bit about your budgets.
Ah, okay.
Right. Well, that would be one. How do you use your budget and for what? And the second question would be probably with all those new changes in the procedures, what's the implication on the budget?
Thank you.
Do you get an increase on budget due to all those procedural changes?
So first of all, just let me clarify that there have been no procedural changes. The procedures in general have remained the same. The effect, for instance, of one action of what it has, that has changed, for instance, in the rating. That's literally the only one. Otherwise, nothing else has really changed. What is our budget and how will these changes affect our budget? We asked for more money. We screened for more money. We said that we needed two intersessionals, and nobody said yes. Our budget remained as it was. And by the way, I would like to ask the same question you did. What is our budget? We still don't know what our budget is. We got some line items on certain items. And so we tried to say, well, if we sacrifice that money and not use that for this, can we use that for the intersessional as an example? And so that's how we did it. There was no budget increase. Not a cent has been, to our knowledge, devoted to us beyond what our budget is. And so we actually had to find fiscal space within our own line items to be able to then say that, let's have the intersessional or anything else. So no budget increase, no impact. And can I just say that I think that going forward, There needs to be consultation between the chair-elect, who will be chair next year, prior to the new NOMCOM sitting together, so that the budget that is decided is sufficiently resourced for the activities of that next year. That's how budget cycles usually work, right? That's how, why you make a budget. And that hasn't happened so far, and I think it's helpful if it could happen going forward. Thank you for the question.
Thank you very much. It seems like this finance team is here, actually.
Is it? Okay.
Are they?
I don't see them here.
I don't see them either. What the?
Can I say last comment?
Yeah, make
there's,
it your...
There's a question here on the left.
Okay, Rafik Domek speaking. I think it was a little bit tense as interaction, but I think it was good to hear more why you were thinking to do that. I won't say I'm convinced by the change, because when you are setting about, like, for example, it's kind of eliminating the reality, no, because you can have, like, the way you say, I think, I remember it was like the a green, yellow, and red basket, and so on. There are other approaches that you can use, but I'm not going to talk too much into specifics.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay.
Can I respond to that? My name. This is Zahid Jamil trying to respond to Rafiq.
There are so many changes I have also to digest, because, to be honest, I'm discovering so many things at the same time. And that's, we understand the intention. There is a good faith here to improve. Mm-hmm. And you are constrained, so we need to maybe give input. So I know that was a little bit tense, but we made the...
Day I can change your mind about anything will be a very big day, but don't worry about that. Can I just say something which I think is positive? Zahid Jamil, oh my God, sorry. Okay, going forward, can I make a suggestion? And I put this out there. We know that there are, and this is what I've done. I won't say it's the first year, but we haven't done this for a long time, where we have gone to the community and met people. Like, you didn't see us last year or the year before that, and that was operational reasons. And we've never been to the ASO, for instance. And the ASO was surprised. Why do you want to come and see us? Everything okay? Like, no, we just wanted to outreach and tell you what we do. So I have a request or a suggestion. There seem to be concerns. Can we, if you would like, sit down and discuss them after this also at a particular time? We're happy to have you on a call with us. You can discuss that with us, because it'll help us improve how we do things. It'll help us understand what your concerns are. And so absolutely happy to do that. On the red, yellow, and green basket, we found that, first of all, people who get into the red basket never get out. And the yellow basket also was difficult to get people out of that in practice in the last at least 3-4 years, although you could theoretically do it. You're right, Rafiq. And eventually what ended up happening, and Hans said this in other meetings as well, for instance, we then basically, if you weren't selected to get into the green basket, you're pretty much out in the process. And that's what ended up happening. And that's why that led to many of the other decisions. But I'd really like to have a conversation with you or other people within the NCSG, if you have ideas, to sit with us and continue this dialogue. So, and I appreciate everything. I don't think it was tense. I'm part of the GNSO, so I know these conversations can get heated, and that's a good thing. Thank you.
Stephanie, you have a comment?
Yes, I just...
Your name?
I always say my name. I'm following the Marilyn Cade rule that you wait for the translator to catch up. I start, then I go for the record. Anyway, Stephanie Perrin for the record. I just wanted to get on the record a concept that I think might be useful, and I haven't thought through my comments for the NOMCOM review yet, but I have had the misfortune to be in a government department where the staffing process went wrong, and where the government agency that does the oversight on staffing and all the training and all of that stuff came in and monitored. And it occurs to me that an independent staffing person that you can get at through a contract, which you would need the budget for, right, but I think it might be useful, because after all, this is this weird beast, the multi-stakeholder model, and there is, you don't have a necessarily homogeneous group, neither do you have people always that have had the same required training as you do in a government environment, but I have to have completed all the courses. I do understand that you do briefing and training and that sort of thing, but it's not quite the same. It's not to the same level, I would suggest. So you could have a roving expert just to make sure that there's consistency in the evaluation of the criteria.
I'm dying to respond to that one, and I'm so glad you mentioned it. My name is Ahed Jamil. I'm dying to respond to this. I'm so glad that you mentioned it. Okay. Damon has done a great job this year to find an excellent interview trainer who we wanted, because of the way he sort of explained how the interviews work, was to have him in the room. So we're trying to make sure that that person is there. So when we're evaluating, we're getting this time, and you're up to an objective view from someone who's not, you know, involved in the community, et cetera, to give us what they thought, number one, a professional response. So that's number one. And the second thing we're trying to do is, we've always had these evaluation firms that do their own evaluation, again, totally unconnected to the community, so an objective evaluation. And if we can get those two things, and I don't know if we're going to get those two things, that depends on ICANN contracting and making sure that happens. We've identified those people. We, I think, will be served in exactly the way that you just defined. And can I say that underscoring that in any comment that you send would be very much and highly appreciated. Thank you, so for those.
Farzan Abadi, for the record. Thank you very much, Zahid, for attending. This was, thank you very much, NAMCOM leadership. Hans Peter, do you still want to make a comment? Just say your name, Hans Peter.
I'm Hans Peter Holen, for the record. I just wanted to make a final remark saying that you soon have to think about who you send to the NAMCOM next year.
Yes.
Luckily, I'm not going to be there because as associate chair, I've been chair and chair-elect, and I was 2 years on the NAMCOM before, so I've now served my five-year sentence. But I would really encourage you to think about contributing to that, because that's one way of reforming it, is to actually contribute from the inside, and then also to apply for the position as chair-elect and chair following that. So if somebody wants to discuss what that would take or whether that's a good idea, please contact me and I will share my experiences in that.
Thank you very much. So I'm just going to, do you want to say something?
Yes, sure. Damon Ashcraft, for the record, I just want to say with respect to your representation, Henriette, even though she hasn't been there in person, is doing a fantastic job, and she's lively on the phone, and she's serving you well. So I just wanted to compliment her publicly. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting her yet, but she sounds like a remarkable person.
I'm so sorry, if you don't mind. Zahid Jamil, yes. We had complained that people who come to the NAMCOM, we ended up having 1 year where there was only one woman. That was it. And it was all men in the room deciding all these things. So kudos to you and others who sent women to the NAMCOM. One last thing. I actually thought this was going to be a lot more challenging, and I have to say that I'm so happy in the kind of debate and discussion we had on this. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Farzaneh.
Thank you very much, Zahid. Yes, it was a little bit heated, but I think it was great to meet you, and thank you very much for coming and meeting us. Now we have Thomas, who's going to talk about GDPR.
I'm glad you didn't ask me to say my name myself. It's day number 5 into the ICANN meeting. I can hardly remember who I am. It's of no consequence. Hello, everyone. I have to confess, I have a hard stop at maybe 2 minutes before 6:30 because I'm supposed to be with the board caucus on the framework of interpretation on human rights. So that's just a little heads up. So you tell me what I should discuss.
Farzan Abadi is speaking. Stephanie has his hand up already, her hand up already. So go ahead.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. Thomas, I'd love to know what happened in the closed session between the registrars and the NTIA.
I haven't been there, so I don't know. I hear through the grapevine that some pressure was imposed on the contracted parties, but I don't know exactly what the language was.
Okay, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. Failing that, I have another burning question. Well, okay, it's not burning, but, and I believe I asked it previously, so you may recall it. In the event that some kind of stay of execution or stay of mise en vigueur enforcement of the GDPR was negotiated with the Data Protection Board, which theoretically might be possible, but how would that affect the rights of the end user or citizen to sue both of them, the controller and the data protection authorities? Because it's my understanding that that would have to go through the European Parliament to be approved, because it removes a right that is reinforced under the Charter. In other words, there's a cross-linkage between the Charter, European Charter of Fundamental Rights, the right to be protected by a data protection authority, and well, for brevity's sake, we'll call it a deal being cut.
To be quite honest, I think that the chances for a stall are so remote, I haven't even tried to think this through. Whenever we discuss the GDPR topic with policymakers of the European Commission and its institutions, they have emphasized the independence of the authorities, and I would find it very difficult or very unlikely that a deal is struck whereby enforcement action is put on hold. So I think we should all be prepared and have no illusions. You know, this is going to enter into force on May 25th. And the question is, what can you do between now and May 25th? And I think my biggest concern with where we are today is that the cookbook, as ICANN has called it, despite all the improvements that you find in there between the three models that have previously been proposed and what's now the Calzoni model, that the document is too patchy for any DPA to comment on. I will, if I may, I would like to illustrate this with two examples. The Calzoni model has proposed a retention period of 2 years beyond the registration of a domain name. And what the cookbook says is that this is in line with European data protection laws. Now, I may not have studied European data protection laws sufficiently, but I'm not aware of any provision in any European data protection law speaking to that very issue. So that doesn't mean that you can't do duration of the registration plus 2 years, but you need to explain, why isn't it 6 months? Why isn't it 5 years? So you need to come up with a rationale as to why you land on 2 years specifically. And it may well be that you need 2 years because 2 years is usually the period during which domain name transfers are disputed. Or that might be the period of time before claims against the contracted parties are barred by statute. You know, the limitation of after which you can't take anyone successfully to court. But you need to spell that out. And if I were a DPA, and if I just got the information, we want 2 years beyond the registration of the domain name, that would not put me in a position whether the rationale for that exact time span is sufficient or not. And therefore, you know, you need to put flesh to the bones. Why do you want those 2 years? The other point that I want to mention is the requirement to collect the full WHOIS data, i.e. the data elements for the registrant, the admin C, billing C, tech C. Although we know from the use case matrix that ICANN has conducted a couple of months back that no registrar uses the billing data in the WHOIS for sending invoices. They send invoices to the account holder, right? I'm not saying that you can't collect these data elements. I doubt that you can legitimately collect them following the principle of data minimization. But if ICANN chose to require those data elements to be collected, they need to explain why. What they said in the cookbook is that they want to leave that to the community process, and that this has basically been done for so many years. But you need to explain, you know, yes, we need the technical contact because that serves certain purposes and this is why we need it. But in the absence of an explanation why you need it, you won't get any DPA in the world, that's my firm belief, to speak to that and give their blessing to that collection, right? So I think that a lot of the things that you find in the cookbook might be defendable, but we don't know whether they are defendable in the absence of any rationale offered. And this is what makes it difficult. So I have publicly applauded ICANN for the progress that has been made, but more work needs to be done. And I think that ICANN has the hope that since they now produce this document, and I heard Joran say, this is as far as I could go, right? So I think that this document probably has a completion status of 3 to 5%. And they're now throwing this over the fence to the governments and to the Article 29 group to fill in the blanks. And I guess that's just not going to happen. So I think we need to come up with rationales for what we're doing. And then probably the Article 29 group and others will take a look at it and say, well, that sounds okay. Or, you know, you've gone too far or you are too restrictive. Stephanie.
I don't want to monopolize the conversation. Stephanie Perrin, for the record, as far as he's rolling her eyes at that, for those of you who are on remote, she knows me too well. I'm calling this the spaghetti model, Thomas, because it's like they threw it against the wall to see how much would stick, you know? And there's more sticking than the last time, but I agree with you. I wouldn't go quite so low as for the legal rationale, but you're the lawyer. I'm not. I wondered if you could explain, because one of the things that concerns me quite a bit in the current model is full thick who is, and full thick who is going to the escrow agent. And so, I mean, quite frankly, if I were a law enforcement agency, why would I not just turn up at the escrow agent? Because there's going to be more data there because there is less limit. That's got to be kept as long as the registration is alive and for a period afterwards.
Yeah.
Much better than the data retention requirement, you know. And as to the date of the data retention, I mean, you could add up a few months, 9 months for the average time for an MLAT to be processed, 6 months to allow an investigation, blah, blah. You don't get to 2 years, no matter how you slice that one. Thanks.
Well, Thomas Rickert, for the record, I just wanted to explain the mechanics that, you know, if you want to come to 2 years, you need to explain why you think you can get to 2 years. Now, with respect to escrow, I think the paper is not precise enough. The registrars today are required to collect something in the area of 75 data elements, not all of which are personally identifiable data. But there's payment data, IP addresses, other services than domain names that are provided, and so on and so forth. Yet, the Calzone model just says that all the data needs to be escrowed. That would be more escrow than what the registrars are currently required to escrow, because the data that they are required to collect and retain according to the data retention specification is not escrow today, if you look at the RAA, right? And therefore, I think it's just an editorial glitch that they have not specified what needs to be escrowed. Same would be true for the data retention waivers, which they said would be kept intact, right? Because that has caused some confusion because, yes, we do have the data retention waiver process that was applied for by a couple of European registrars to limit their retention periods. But that process was meant to be for payment data as well. And I think ICANN meant it to be applicable to registration data, which is a subset of these data elements. I think we're pretty much into the weeds now, you know, but I think that this needs to be tidied up, and ICANN needs to specify exactly what data elements are meant when they're talking about escrow and the waivers.
If nobody interrupts us, Stephanie Perrin, for the record, we're going to keep going on this. These are really important weeds, though, because the registrars that I talk to claim they do not give the detailed, you know, like the IP address and those sorts of things to the escrow agent. That doesn't mean it isn't required in the RAA. Now, the document itself, and as you say, there's so many holes in the document you can't tell. The document itself says full thick data. That doesn't include the billing data, but the RAA has the billing data. So which is it, you know?
Yeah, so I guess that needs to be tidied up. It is my impression that ICANN meant registration data only, i.e. the data for registrant, admin seat, taxi, billing seat, and not payment data, IP addresses, and so on and so forth. Do we have more questions?
Farzana Badi speaking. Thank you very much, Thomas. But you mentioned something. You said that each data element that is being collected, there has to be a purpose, a legal purpose for it, right? And ICANN has to provide that. That worries me a little bit because they might come up with these purposes and they might bring up these rationales and reasons, and then the purposes are set and they're beyond ICANN mission, and then we are going to have problems.
That's a valid concern. This is Thomas Rickard speaking. You always need the combination of a lawful purpose and a legal ground for each and any processing activity. And so far, we don't have enough information to assess whether what's in the model is actually justified or not. So, but that led me to the conclusion that I think we need to fill in the blanks, because I guess it will not happen, or it will most likely not happen, that the DPAs will get back with a fully fledged data model. So I think we need to assist the contracted parties in providing the full story about what can and what can't be done. So at least the GAC and the Article 29 group and other interested parties can look at the rationale and say, okay, you've gone too far here, you should be more strict here and there. Because even if you look at the framework for the gated access or the accreditation model, there seems to be the notion, and I hope that I'm wrong, amongst GAC members, that each and every government would just come up with lists of entitled parties and that those would get bulk access to each and every data that's behind this firewall. And I think you need to take a more nuanced approach. You need to look at who is the requestor. Is it a requestor inside the EU? Is it a requestor outside the EU where you have non-EU transfer regulations that need to be played by? Then you have different access rights potentially and different requirements for law enforcement versus security researchers versus consumer protection agencies versus IP holders. Typically, and this might sound a strange concept for you, it will be more difficult for non-European law enforcement to get access to data than, for example, for IP rights holders. Because the impact of what law enforcement can do to individuals is much harder than claims that are based on civil law. Right? So, and nobody seems to have bothered so far about making the distinction between all the use cases, looking at the purposes for the individual use cases, looking at the legitimate interests that could back up those purposes and limit that with the appropriate safeguards. Not everyone, you know, I have a huge issue with granting gated access in the first place, but let's just assume it were possible to do that at the global level. An IP lawyer doesn't necessarily need to get access to each and every data element. They might be okay with doing individual queries for specific cases and then have captures that they need to do manually. Yet a different thing is lookup of historical data or reverse lookups. You know, but nobody has really spelled that out, and I think you need to write it up and come up with a rationale for each and every of those use cases.
Thank you very much, Thomas Farzan. Stephanie, we have Xavier and Becky are here, and we need to talk about finances. So we can let you leave earlier, I think. But there is a remote participant comment. No, you've talked too much. There is a remote participant comment. And if you just read that and we get the response, and then we go to Xavier and Becky. Okay, go ahead.
This is Ari Lam for the record. There is a remote question and comment from Kathy Kleinman. A note, the GAC is also asking for more rationale for each data element, public and non-public. Can we talk briefly about the accreditation system for tiered access and whether we want GAC or the ICANN community to do it? If the ICANN community, my preference, how do we do it in the short time available?
Thanks very much, Kathy, for the question. It is a challenge. It is a challenge. I think as far as the role of the GAC is concerned, my preferred option would be for the GAC to substantiate their own requests. The GAC has sent a letter to ICANN asking for certain access to be made possible. The GAC has enumerated certain legitimate interests and user groups. So I think it's perfectly appropriate to ask the GAC for how they think this can be made work in a compliant fashion. But I would not go further, and I've made this clear during the community session yesterday, the GAC should not have a role in operationalizing a gated access system. That is up to ICANN and its community. I doubt that this will be possible by May. So my prediction is that come May, we will not have a globally working accreditation system, but those who want to get access to data will need to go to individual registries and registrars and ask for that data. And potentially they will need subpoenas or other legal documents to get access to that before we have a robust system that would facilitate concerted access globally.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Thank you very much for attending. This was very useful for us and for our members.
Thank you for having me.
So now we go to the agenda item, finance and budget discussion session with Xavier and Becky. Sorry, Xavier, I don't know your family name.
Calvez. Thank you. And first, we want to apologize for coming up late to your session. Our punishment is that we're in between you and a glass of wine, possibly. So, but we really apologize. The closer we come to the end of the day, everybody becomes late. So sorry for that. We have a few topics that we had prepared, but of course we will want to focus on the topics that you're most interested in. We were suggesting to speak about the process for the operating plan and budget, and maybe the reserve fund if it's of interest to this group, but please let us know otherwise.
Thank you, Xavier. So, Farzan is speaking. What are our members thinking? Are you thinking? Which part do you want? I think we are all tired, so maybe we just pick one issue. Replenishment, are we going with replenishment? Is that okay, let's do that.
Thank you. Next slide, please. Thank you. So, trying to brief you very quickly on the reserve fund. There is currently a public comment process that started last week, Tuesday, for the replenishment of the reserve fund. There's a suggested strategy of replenishment that is offered in that public comment a document, and it's suggested by the board, and the board seeks input on that strategy. It's a public comment number two because there was a previous public comment period 4 months ago, on first, what is the rationale and what should be the rationale for the reserve fund? Why do we need one? And what is the target level of that reserve fund? So that period was closed. A lot of comments were submitted, and the board reviewed the comments. And in its board meeting of early February, one adopted an expanded rationale for the reserve fund as per the offered comments, and two confirmed the already existing target level for the reserve fund as 12 months of minimum of operating expenses. That is the target level that had been in place since the beginning of the reserve fund in 2007, but it felt that it was relevant to reevaluate whether it was adequate or not, and the comments received were mainly consistent with that target level. So the board confirmed the target level. Once we have set that target level, then you can easily see that there is an issue, which is that we should have 12 months of operating expenses, and we have 6, more or less. So in dollar numbers, in U.S. dollar numbers, The reserve fund should be approximately 138 million, which is simply the FY19 budget that we use as a proxy to measure 12 months of operating expenses. And the actual reserve fund, the balance of the reserve fund that we have now, is $70 million at the end of December. And that is after having allocated 5 million of the FY17 excess that we have seen the previous fiscal year, allocated 5 million of that FY17 excess to the reserve fund. So it was 65 million before. Now it's 70, but that still leaves a shortfall of approximately $68 million. So the public comment currently offered is offering a strategy for replenishment. First, it suggests that replenishment happens over a period of 5 years. And second, the document also lists the various sources of fund that ICANN has available for replenishment. Out of that list, then an approach is suggested, a strategy is suggested by the board for replenishment. It consists of the following. First, for the organization to generate excesses up to $15 million over the 5-year period for the purpose of replenishment of the reserve fund. Two, using a fraction of the auction proceeds for replenishment, and the suggested amount of the auction proceeds to do that is an amount of $36 million, which corresponds to the INS stewardship transition expenses incurred over between 2014 and 2018 for the purpose of the INS stewardship transition. Once we would have done that, then there would be a remaining gap of approximately $17 million, and the board is offering three sources there. A contribution from the leftover funds from the new GTLD program, if there would be any. So you may remember that the new GTLD program led to collecting application fees, that the application processing has occurred over the past 5-6 years, that there are funds remaining available to cover for risks today, risks being in this case mainly for now lawsuits or IRPs, which are happening. So we're consuming some of those funds for the purpose of covering for of defense costs and so on. But if there would be leftover funds from that after the end of the program, those funds could be considered for the replenishment. Second option, an additional contribution from the organization in addition to the $15 million already offered in the first bullet point. And last option, an additional contribution from auction proceeds in addition to the $36 million already suggested in the second bullet point. So the board is leaving open for community input these three options. You may notice that you're not seeing in this strategy to increase the fees on the registrants and the registries and registrars. So that's an option that the board is suggesting to not retain in order to not burden the registrants, basically, at the end of the day. Well, that I'll stop to see if there's any questions or comments.
Thank you. Aidan Ferdelin for the record, and thanks for the presentation. Earlier today, there was a suggestion that was raised informally that there could be further withdrawals from the reserve fund to fund the recommendations associated with the implementation of the Workstream 2 recommendations. I was wondering, if that was to happen, how would the further shortfall be funded? Would it be likely that this would be a further contribution from the new GTLD auction proceeds fund, or... what would be the replenishment strategy there? Thanks.
Thank you. So I'm not aware of that case that you just presented. So I also don't know what we would do if it would happen, because I don't think that's been evaluated at all. My sense would be that there would be a very strong desire, in my views, let me back up. I will speak on the behalf of the role that I have in the organization. It will be simpler than speculating as to what others would do. So if it would be just for me, I would have a strong desire to not fund implementation expenses to implement recommendations from WS2 from the reserve fund. Now, of course, this is without knowing what those recommendations are and what the costs would be to implement. Right? My sense would be that we should try to look at what the recommendations are retained, what does it take to implement them in terms of resources, and try to either replace things that already happened that we think are less important than the recommendations from WS2, or try to, and or, by the way, it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive, and try to plan over time the implementation of those recommendations so that if they cannot all be done immediately by lack of resources, that they are at least scheduled for implementation. And, of course, with trying to do what is felt as the most urgent earlier and the least urgent later, maybe. So I'm speculating a bit, but because I don't know, right? But that would be my sense of what we should be doing, if that would be the case. Thank you.
Hi, this is Robin Gross for the record. I have a question about the second to last bullet point, excuse me, on there where the remainder of the money would come from. It says additional contribution from ICANN.org. So I'm just wondering if you could be a little more specific about that. Where is the thought about that would come from? Is there a pile of money somewhere that we can draw from, or would we need to have budget cuts in some of our other programs in order to find that? So I'm just wondering if you could be a little more specific about that point. Thanks.
Thank you for that question. That's very relevant, and it's not precised here. So both for the 15 million that is in the first bullet point for our ICANN organization's contribution, as well as for any additional contribution from the organization, it would need to come from savings that are resulting from an excess. So we would need to say we're going to spend less money so that we create an excess versus funding, and that excess becomes then allocated to the reserve fund. So there's no... Of course, I didn't summarize here the entire paper, but in the paper we list all the possibility of funds that ICANN has: auction proceeds, new GTLD funds, raising the fees, and so on. And so there's no other sources of funding. So this one is about the organization on an annual basis planning for an excess. So before we start the year in the budget that we all work on, we plan for limiting our expenses with, let's say, for example, a 3 million gap between the total funding we're expecting and the total amount of expenses that we're expecting, so that if everything happens as planned, we have 3 million left at the end of the year, and we put that 3 million into the reserve fund. So, yes, to your question, this assumes that we find savings to do that, or funding increases. So we are not expecting that funding is going to increase significantly at least over the next few years. So we would need to look at operational savings, which is what we've put in that first bullet point, but it also applies to the second bullet point, to your point. So, yes, it would be savings from the organization across all areas of spend of the organization to be able to do that.
Thank you very much. So we are going over time and we cannot continue. But last comment. No, it's okay. Last comment by Joan, and then, yeah, we can't take them. I'm sorry.
Hi, it's Joan Kerr for the record. So my question was kind of related to what Robin's question is, but from another angle. To replenish the funds, I was wondering why the presentation is about operating expenses. So you want a reserve fund for 11 months of operating expenses, right? That's what you want in a reserve fund.
No, Sorry, the target level is a minimum of 12 months of operating expenses. I want to distinguish, in case that would help, that we're using that metric of 12 months to measure the target level. It is not what the reserve fund is supposed to be used for. So that may have been your point or comment. So when we say 12 months of operating expenses, it's simply to try to dimension the target level of the reserve fund in terms of, in a language of operating expenses. But the reserve fund, if you have read the first paper, the reserve fund is there to ideally never be used. Right? It's only to be used if there is an extreme need that was not planned for very large expenses. Think office destroyed, earthquake, and we need to rebuild something. Or there's a very sudden shortfall of funding that we didn't plan for. So that's the type. So it's supposed ideally to never be used for. So it's not, when we say month of operating expenses, it's not simply to be used just for operating expenses.
Well, thank you very much, Javier, for and Becky for joining us. I'm sorry, I keep saying Javier. Is that okay?
Don't worry about it. Anything okay. I recognize, I accept.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you.